Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsive day for the 26th of Iyar. We begin with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, to David Hochhauser, for their help in putting these shiurim online, making them available to you. Today, for the 26th of Iyar, we're going to see a tshuva, a responsive of Ravad Yosef's, from Shut Yabia Omer, the 9th volume, the Yeridea section, Simon Chavav, responsive number 26, from the 26th of Iyar of Tavshin Chavtet of 1969. And this is the tshuva he writes to Baruch Rakover, to Harav Baruch Rakover, who was an Av Beis Din in Haifa, was a Rav in Haifa, and is part of the Rakover family. The Rakover family is this well-known Yerushalayim family. One of the brothers of this Baruch Rakover passed away in, I think, 2002. As a Rav, and then he has a brother who is a professor, Nachum Rakover, who is a much awarded scholar of Mishpat Ivri and has written many interesting books, a couple of which I think I've read. And then they have another brother who's a guy who changed his name, and there was an author named Simcha Raz, and he wrote a very famous book about Rabbi Aryeh Levine called Ish Tzadik Hayah. And again, it's a well-accomplished family. Oh, and one of their brothers-in-law is Rav Hadari, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat HaKotel. So it's a very accomplished family. So this Rabbi Baruch Rakover writes to Rabbi Yosef in 1969 about a Bechor, a firstborn, who was delivered with forceps. I think it's forceps. It's Melkachayim, with tools. I'm pretty sure it's forceps that bring the baby out. And the question is, since those tools cover the head of the baby, they separate the baby's head from the mother's insides. And then the question becomes, does that interfere with the status of the baby as a Bechor? Because the Gemara assumes, as we're going to talk about, that the Kedusha of a Bechor, the sanctity of a Bechor, that necessitates Pidyon, necessitates redemption, stems from the Rechem, the mother's womb. And it's not the mother's womb when the baby's inside and just resting there, so that on the way out, the baby touches it or has contact with it, and that's what's Mekadesh. So the forceps, theoretically, are a barrier between the mother and the baby in the delivery process, and therefore, perhaps, there is no pidyon haben that's necessary. Rabbi Yosef points out that in Gemara Chulin, on Daf Ayin, page 70a, they have a question there, what if you happen, if you were to, and this is talking about an animal bechor, an animal firstborn, rather than a human firstborn, and that might be different, so we'll get to it, but let's say you wrapped it up in something, in a sieve of some sort, in some kind of a covering. So Rashi there says, maybe since it doesn't touch the rechem on its way out, it doesn't become sanctified as a Bechor. So maybe you say, well, Siv isn't a good example because Siv is a Chatzitza, that's an actual barrier, and therefore maybe, yes, what about, because it's a different kind of a mint, what happens if you take like a placenta or some other kind of an amniotic fluid, an amniotic sac, so that's the actual stuff of the animals involved, and you wrap the fetus, the embryo on its way out in that, and then you pull it out. So, do you say that that's a separation, and therefore it doesn't count as a bechor, as a firstborn, or do you say no, that min ben mino is not chotz, it doesn't create a chatzitza? And it doesn't answer the question over there. So that Gemara not answering the question, the Rambam therefore passes in Hilchos Bechoros, that if you have a bechor and you wrap it in these kinds of things, it's a suffek bechor. So in animals that has all sorts of ramifications, one of the reasons why, especially today, when we don't have kohanim, we don't give firstborn animals to kohanim to, because of the reasons, because we can't do anything with them anyway, we can't sacrifice them as we're supposed to, and all sorts of challenges that we have, you might think that it's okay to find ways to avoid having an animal come out and be qualified as a bechor. So therefore, if there's this way of doing it by wrapping in something, then that might have been a way to avoid the problems, because a lot of times when a bechor comes out, if a Jew owns a bechor, when it comes out today, you'd have to just wait around for it to get a mum, for it to get kind of a blemish before you could do anything with it. So there's all sorts of issues and concerns and reasons why you don't have to be a Jew trying to avoid your obligations to count to be able for this to be interesting stuff. So now, though, that discussion that was about animals might have some ramifications for our discussion about a baby. You didn't do this, obviously you wouldn't do this on purpose to avoid it becoming Bechor, because nobody wants, as we're going to see in the Tshuva, nobody wants to avoid having their child be a Bechor for terms of pidyon haben. It's not the kind of thing. And also, you do a forceps delivery because you have to do a forceps delivery. So it seems like a forceps delivery would create this kind of an issue as well. And there was an earlier Tshuva, in Tshuva's called Chelkat Yoav, that had taken that position, that since there's a doubt in the Gemara about whether miktzat rechem can be mekadesh, whether touching part of the rechem, whether some touching of the rechem can count to sanctify a bechor, that we therefore assume we require kol arechem, that it just fully, completely touch everything that it ordinarily touches on its way out. So therefore, if the doctors need to use forceps, that's a chatzitza, and therefore it's only a suffek bechor. Once it's only a suffek bechor, the halacha in the Gemara is that in a suffek situation, in a situation of doubt, now, we're going to come back to this question later in the tshuva. The first thought is that once it's only a situation of doubt, then the father isn't obligated to do it because it becomes the Cohen's challenge to say, no, I think you owe me the money. And the father could say, as we say in lots of monetary situations, if you think I owe you money, you have to prove it. So if that were true, then in the case of a suffek bechor, where we're not sure that it's a bechor, then I would be the father, would be exempt from pidyon, from redeeming it for that reason. Then he mentions, the Chilchei Yoav mentions that he had presented this idea to other great scholars of his time. They generally agreed with his reasoning, but they said, because it's a new idea, we've never seen any sources that would say such a thing, they thought you should do a pidyon without a bracha, and then give the money for the pidyon to the kohen, but as a matan al manat l'chatzi, meaning you can't say the father's required to do it, so therefore he wants the money back. He doesn't want to spend the money on it, but that you should do it just for the sake of maybe, in case, you should do it. The Avnei Nezer, around the same time, the Avnei Nezer was just a few years older than the Chilchei Yoav, but he knew him, and he talked about this issue as well, and he wrote that you'd have to talk to doctors first, and he says, because he's heard that the way they use forceps at the time is really only not to grab the baby's head, meaning one way that you can get a baby out is to take the baby's head with the forceps, and they're gentle enough that you don't crush the baby's head when you pull them out, and you pull it out, but then it's on the baby. He said he's heard that the way that you use the forceps, use these tools, is to open the womb wide, create a greater opening, and they don't touch the baby's head at all. And if that's true, then all this wouldn't be an issue, because if you're just opening the womb, then the baby touches whatever it touches on the way out. He says he thinks there's a sfeik sfeika to require a pidyon. We have often seen a sfeik sfeika to avoid a prohibition. That's when we say, well, I'm not sure there's a prohibition here for this reason. And even if that reason isn't true, there's not a prohibition here for that reason. That's called a double doubt that you have. So in halacha, you have a sfeik sfeika. A double doubt are the kinds of things that allow us to say we don't have to pay attention to that, and therefore we don't have to assume that there's a requirement for, that there's a prohibition here. That's the ordinary sfeik sfeika. But then you can have a sfeik sfeika the other way. You can have a sfeik sfeika where we think we have a reason to think we have an obligation. Oh, I'm sorry. We have an obligation. Then we have a reason that we're not obligated in that obligation. Then we have a sfeik sfeika about that reason that will then reinstate the obligation. In other words, we had the baby. Is the baby firstborn baby to this mother? That would create an obligation. Then you have the forceps delivery. That makes us wonder whether there's really an obligation here. Right, we're not sure if we can be mechayev b'pidyon. Now, if I have a sfeik sfeika about that forceps delivery issue, then that will reinstate the original obligation in pidyon. So, what was the other Nezer's sfeik sfeika? First, a suffek is, as we saw right at the beginning, is that it wasn't even true that, let's say I completely, forget the forceps, let's say I completely wrap the baby in some other material, an external material, not a shilya material, which is min bimino, which is the same material as the womb, but I take some other, completely other material and I wrap the baby in it. The halacha never concluded that that was for sure a chatzitza, and therefore the animal born wasn't a firstborn, it was a suffek. And the Rambam paskin it as a suffek. If so, then even if it were true that a forceps delivery is exactly like wrapping an animal baby in a sieve, in some kind of a covering before bringing it out, if they're the exact same, that's only suffek. That's suffek number one. Which means if it's suffek, that maybe it's not a full-fledged firstborn. The other half of the suffek is maybe it is. And then, even if you say it is, maybe miktsas rechem mikadesh. Maybe it's enough, as we saw in the case, I didn't stress it before, the Gemara talks about a case where you have twins being born. The question it raises is that in the case of twins, then the baby that comes out, however the Gemara thought this worked, I don't particularly care about the anatomy question here, but however the Gemara thought it worked out, that one baby, when there are twins in there, then one of the embryos, one of the fetuses, blocking the other one from fully touching the rechem. If that's true, then the question becomes in the Gemara, and it's also a question that wasn't fully answered, is miksas rechem mikadesh? Is the fact that this baby touched part of the mother's womb, not as much as an ordinary one baby born at a time baby would touch, but part of it, is that enough to mechayev in a bechor? And that might be another possibility. And therefore, you have two reasonable sfikot that would suggest that maybe there is reason to be mechayev, to be obligated, this bechor, in pinyon haben. So, the Reuven Yosef notes that at the end of the Avnei Nezer, that's what the Avnei Nezer wrote. And then he said, then that's the Avnei Nezer thought the Sfeika to be Mechayev opinion. And the Chelkas Yogav, who's a couple years younger than the Avnei Nezer, when he wrote some stuff where he wasn't sure this Sfeika counted, which Reuven Yosef does not go over here. And then he notes that the Chelkas Yogav concluded that all of that is just discussion. But certainly, given what the Avnei Nezer said, then I'm not going to disagree with him and let the pinyon haben be on Sunday, and they can do it with a bracha, as the Avnei Nezer had suggested. So the Avnei Nezer held the sfeika in favor of, right, the double reason, the two reasons that you would think that it's still a bechor, was sufficient to allow for a pinyon haben with the bracha. And the Chalka Yoav ended up agreeing. By the way, Rav Yosef throws it in brackets. The Avnei Nezer never said with a bracha. The Chalka Yoav assumes you do with a bracha. The Avnei Nezer never said that. The Avnei Nezer had said without a bracha. In any case, it seems like they're agreeing that you would, in that situation, a forceps delivery, nonetheless do a pinyon haben. Added to that, the Maharash Engel wrote that maybe we're wrong to think of this as a chatzitza at all. The whole premise of the question is that when the baby is delivered with a forceps, that forceps is a foreign material, and it creates a barrier between the baby and the mother, and maybe that gets in the way of the process of creating the kedusha, the special sanctity of a bechor, of a pet derech, of the first out of the womb, because it's not fully coming out of the womb in that sense, and because there's something separating it. So Maharash Engel had argued, Maharash Engel had argued that we have sources that suggest that anything we do for the sake of protecting the mother doesn't constitute a chatzitz. He says, because if you didn't do a forceps delivery, if you didn't take the baby out in this way, the mother would be endangered. It doesn't count as a chatzitz. So why does he think that? Well, there's a tshuva in Divrei Chaim, another book of, that's the first sons of Rebbe, I think, is Divrei Chaim. So Divrei Chaim had said, Linyan Ritiyahu Divuka al Gabe Ha'isha. Let's say a woman has a bandage. Now, this is a mikvah question. Ordinarily, we say you have to remove all things, all foreign items on your body. So, in fact, though, the halachos of chatzitz are a little bit more complicated. First of all, this is not in this tshuva, but my memory is that halachically, the full problem of chatzitz is only if it covers the majority of the body and is an item or a material the person on whom it is doesn't want it to be there. But that either if it's the majority of the body, the person doesn't care about it, he'll leave it there, or she'll leave it there forever, or for extended period of time. Or the other round, if it's not the majority of the body, so then it's like, as far as I recall, a rabbinic extension of the rules to avoid any problems that we see. You have to make sure to remove it. So the point being that a chatzitza is not just any foreign material. It's any foreign material that doesn't in any way connect to your body, and it doesn't have to do with your body. So therefore, the Divrei Chaim said, if a woman has a bandage on her body, and it's a bandage which she cannot currently safely remove, he argued that it was chashiva eina makped. It was considered not a chatzitza because it's not an item on her body that she cares about. And I think the halacha is that if it's a minority of the body and it's something you don't care about, then in fact we don't. So we today, in mikvah rooms all over the world, are very careful to get rid of everything. But the Divrei Chaim is saying if you have a problem, the halacha actually is if you have something small on one's body that one is not makped about, that one doesn't care to remove, then you can go to mikvah. It's not considered a chatzitza. And he included in that bandages. So the Maharash Engel was saying, so forceps should be maybe the same kind of a thing. Since it's not material that you are objecting to, because it's important to the health of the mother, maybe therefore it doesn't count as a chatzitza. Another avenue attack on this whole question is the Revisi point that he saw in Shut Levush Mordechai, who had said this whole discussion in the Gemara about whether something gets Kiddush or not, and the level of contact with the Rechem it has or not, is irrelevant to human babies. He says all of that is only about animal firstborn, and that's because animal firstborn have significant differences from human firstborn. Animal firstborn of kosher animals, of a shor or a seh, of an ox or a sheep, Kohanim, those are, theoretically at least, that in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, destined as to be sacrifices. So then we're looking for that kind of Kedusha. When we talk about the Kedusha, the sanctity of a firstborn, it's the going on the Mizbeach. And even if it's a donkey firstborn, which will not be sacrificed, it is nonetheless prohibited to get any benefit from it until it's been redeemed. You can't do any work with it and all those kinds of things. But with a person, the whole question of a person firstborn is there's no issue other than you have to give a pigeon a bit, but that's a separate mitzvah. And so when we talk about the sanctity of a firstborn baby, it's a whole different category. And therefore held the shul of Moshe Mordechai that the questions of chatzitza from the mother are completely irrelevant. He thought there would be no question at all that you would do a pigeon a ben, and so too in Igros Moshe, says Rav Yosef, you say he also takes it for granted that none of this applies to a human baby. Rav Moshe inferred that from the fact that the Gemara only talked about it regarding animals. You don't find it anywhere in the Rishonim that talk about human babies, and most of the Achronim who do talk about it agreed, as we've seen until now, that really you are obligated to do a pidyon, that you only have a chatzitza unless it's rov harosh. I'm sorry, that it's not considered a chatzitza and rov harosh because of the way the forceps delivery goes and the materials, etc. However, he did disagree. I think the Levushi and Mordechai did disagree with Ramarash Engel and said the idea that it's not a chatzitza, the forceps not a chatzitza, because the woman doesn't care and because the mother, it's for the safety of the mother, he says that's completely irrelevant to our question, because the question of chatzitza is in terms of what establishes for the baby, and for the baby's purposes, the forceps isn't doing very much. I'm not sure that that's true, because if the mother's, I guess the point would be that theoretically, not that we would want this to happen at all, but theoretically, if the mother died in childbirth, the baby could still survive and come out, so the baby doesn't care about the forceps delivery, because you could find other ways to open the mother, one, I don't know. In any case, Levushi Mordechai rejected that idea, not the idea that it's not a chatzitza if you don't care about it, but I think the idea that the question of whether it's a chatzitza or not in terms of the mother, whether that or not that affects the question of the baby. I think the Maharash Engel would have answered that they're still interconnected with each other, and that which is not a chatzitza for the mother is all part of the delivery of the baby, not a chatzitza at all. Or not a chatzitza for the mother, therefore it means that it sort of defines the mother's rechem for those purposes, including that forceps, and therefore it's as if the baby touched the rechem fully in order to get whatever sanctity a human baby b'chor has. There were other Achronim who held that way as well, that Vesef has great command of the Shut literature, so he says, Sefer B'chor Adam by Rav Avram Kamshevitz, whoever that is, agrees with the Maharash Engel Halacha Ula Maisa, that if a woman's having trouble giving birth and she's in danger, then the forceps delivery is not any kind of a chatzitza because it's revute. It's keeping her alive, but it's also keeping the baby alive, and therefore it all considered part of the same process and not a chatzitza, and you can do a pidyon ben. There is a bit of a side conversation about Rov and Chazaka that the relevance to here is not so important, so we'll leave it. But then Rav Yosef points out that a shut called Chavalim Bani'imim was discussing this whole question. And then he notes that even if you held, like the Mishnah Melech, Lishna Lamelech, that the father is going to be Pater Min HaPidyon, is because of a Sveik Sveika, because you're not sure that he's obligated. So if it's an issue of, let's say, an actual animal Bechor, and there's a lot of money involved, and therefore the owner is really very anxious that it not to be declared a Bechor, that would be a whole question. Then when you had a Sveik Sveika, when you had a doubt, a double doubt, you would say, well, he doesn't, you know, we can't force him to pay the money. And especially since he can say to the Kohen, if you're so sure of it, prove it to me, right? It would be called mamon she'ein lo tovim, money that nobody can really demand because they can't prove that it belongs to them. So then the additional point, though, is, but that's all true about an animal and that kind of money and that level of money, you want to lose the animal. But this shoot, Chavalim Banimim says, but when it comes to Pidyon HaBen, the father wants to do the Pidyon HaBen. He's not looking to get out of it, right? There are all these other kinds of questions to think about in halacha and in mitzvot to come up, right? There are times when we rely on a certain leniency and say, you don't have to this, you don't have to that. So that all works if you don't want to have to do that. But what if you want to have to do that? I remember, not the same thing at all, and having a baby is certainly a big simcha, but I remember when I was sitting Shiva, however it worked out, the psak I got was that I should get up a day earlier than I thought I would have to get up, and I wondered about that. So the halacha is that we go halacha d'rabbi mekel be'avel. So even though the question involved was one where we follow the lenient ruling, and that had me get up for a day, I said to one of my teachers, I said, why is that necessarily the rule, it's not necessarily leniency if I want the extra day. So I ended up getting up because that was what the psak that I got, but that's always a question. So here too, it's sometimes a leniency to tell a guy, you don't have to consider that animal a bechor, because now you get to keep that animal, and it's mamash ein lo tovim. But in terms of pidyon haben, says the chavalim b'nei imim, people want to do that. So if even though there's a sfeik about it, he thinks he can make a bracha on it, and the shulchokot Yaakov, which is not the chalkot Yoav, it's a different shul, he also says, shekol ha'ashav mukhan nekayim et pidyon haben, in these kinds of situations where you're not sure and they have a doubt, the father wants to do it, and then the chalkot Yaakov, who's like two generations later, born in 1896, and passed away in the 70s, writes that it's such a dear mitzvah and it comes only occasionally, right, for different infrequent occasions. So I'm not sure quite what he meant. It's not quite so infrequent today, although the fact that they need to come together is it needs to be two Yisraels, the husband and wife, if they both be from Yisrael families, if either the husband or the wife are Levim or Kohanim, you wouldn't have a pidyon haben. Then it has to be a first baby without any miscarriages. And then it has to be the kind of delivery, not a C-section. It has to be a natural delivery. So I remember somebody pointing out that it would seem like you should have a lot more pidyon habens than we end up doing, but it's not so common. So since it's not so common, if a father gets in a position where he has the opportunity for it, he doesn't care about the money. He's excited to do it. So in those situations, says the Chalkat Yaakov, you can make a bracha as well as long as you have a sfeik alechiyuva. So that's the flip side. We always say sfeik bracha lahaka. We say we don't want to make bracha if they're unnecessary. We always worry about making bracha if they're necessary because it's a misuse of Hashem's name. And we always have these worries. But what about if the push is you'd like to make a bracha? So you want to do a pidyon haben. You want to redeem your firstborn son because it's not a question of whether you're going to get this baby or not. You're always going to get the baby. But you'd love it if you could also get the baby with a mitzvah attached to it and the money is insignificant. You want to spend the money and you want to make a bracha. So the Chalkot Yaakov held you could, especially because the Radvaz holds that the whole idea of Sefik Bracha Lehakel is when we don't know whether you should make the bracha on its own or not. But if we're having a doubt whether you have to do a mitzvah or not, and then there's a bracha attached to the mitzvah, says the Radvaz, then the whole idea of Sefik Bracha Lehakel, that we are lenient about making bracha, we refrain from making bracha in cases of doubt, doesn't apply here. Because the question isn't should you make this bracha or not. The question is, should you do this mitzvah or not? And to the extent that we end up saying, yes, go ahead, do the mitzvah, it brings a bracha with it. That's what the Radvaz says. So here too, that would be in our situation as well. For all that, we have room to say that the father is obligated in the midst of pidyon haben, and he wants to be. Then we have the room to say also he can do it with a bracha as well. So too, Rav Avraham Neimark, in another tshuva, which was brought in the Yarchon Kol Torah. So Rav Yosef, I think, was well known for somebody for reading really, really widely, reading everything that came along, and then quoting it, and remembering it, and keeping it in mind. So in the Yarchon Kol Torah, this Rav Neimark says that he had seen a doctor, so whenever you see reports from a doctor, you have to check it out with other doctors, and maybe different doctors at different practices at different times, but this doctor had told this Rav Gaon, Rav Avraham Neimark, that you usually don't start with the forceps delivery until the baby's already partially come out of the uterus. So if the baby's already come out of the uterus, then the part of the baby having contact with the rechem has already happened. So then, whatever you were to say about the forceps, even if you said they're a chatzitza, it wouldn't be a chatzitza on a part that we care about for halacha, because for our halachic purposes, the baby being a firstborn is a function of what happened in the moment that came out of the uterus. And therefore, as Rav Neimark said, that back in the mid to late 1800s, when the Avnei Nezer and the Chalkot Yoav were worried about whether forceps delivery meant you shouldn't really do a pidyon haben or it's only a suffix pidyon haben, he thought that was an excessive stringency on the father, that you should be allowed to allow the pidyon haben go forward, especially since it's really, you're taking away from a joy in a mitzvah, right? People, fathers with their firstborn sons are excited, their firstborn sons. And they're excited, and they're happy, and they want to do a mitzvah, and you're getting away by saying, oh, it's a four-step delivery, I have to think about it, not so clear, maybe without a bracha, maybe this. Says Rav Neimer held that based on what he had heard about the delivery, that you don't start with the four-step, the baby's out enough, that halakhically we're going to consider it a bechor, with all that goes with it, maybe you shouldn't get away with it. And it's a mitzvah that every man can do at most once in their lives, right? You only have one, well, I guess you have separate wives, and they each have a firstborn, but basically it's once in a lifetime, if at all, and therefore they held, and the Rogachover held, and a whole bunch of Akronim held, that you can go ahead, you can do the pidyon haben with a bracha, and enjoy it. This is all especially helped he says that towards the conclusion by the Netziv had written in Sefer HaMikshalah. HaMikshalah was, I think, the Netziv's first book, and it's a commentary on the She'iltot, which was not as was an important Gaonic work, but I think was not completely as much learned as people had been learning and other things. And the Netziv wrote that, his first work on that, and he wrote She'asur la'asa mitzvah b'lo bracha. The Netziv held, and there, at least in the commentary, that whenever you're going to do a mitzvah, you have to make a bracha on it. So there's no idea of something like, there is no idea, the Netziv seems to have held, there is no idea of doing a bracha, a mitzvah, but now without a bracha, just in case it's not really a mitzvah. So if you hold that way, then all the more so here, where we know that you can do a pidyon haben of giving the money, that you can do it with a bracha as well. And he closes with Tzvuot Shor, who says that it's better to make a bracha that you maybe aren't required to, rather than to do a mitzvah without a bracha. So there's all sorts of, so that's another example of that idea. So with the forceps delivery, you have some question about whether the forceps stops the little baby from getting the full status of a bechor, but you have lots and lots of reasons to think it does. First, it might be that it's only, that it's not a chatzitza at all, that it's not a separation, that it's not a barrier between the mother and the baby in the delivery, and therefore the baby's a bechor. Even if you think it is a barrier, it might be that it's not a barrier that completely stops the baby from touching completely, and it might be the mikzas rechem and mekadesh. All that presents a svek, a double doubt, that maybe lets us say that this baby is a bechor. Even with all that, then becomes the question of a bracha, and for all the reasons we said that you can rely on many, many authorities to say you can make a bracha on this mitzvah as well and enjoy it and do it. That is how Rav Yosef comes out on a tshuva written on the 26th of Iyar about a baby delivered by a forceps. Now, on other occasions I've just stopped at this point, but this was a fairly short tshuva, fairly short responsum, so I went and I found another responsum for the 26th of Iyar. It says, should have known the Behuda of from Yecheskel Landa from the late 1700s, and I don't look for these tshuvot by topic. I look for them by date, and then I found important meshivim, and I look up what they say, and is it the right length? And this was the right length, and then I read it, and it's yet another. In the course of our studies together, we've seen the Noda Behuda talk about several different examples of women who get into problems of maybe infidelity, of concerns about infidelity, having infidelity, want to stay with their husbands, and I hadn't noticed it. I've noticed other meshivim who have tendencies. Let's say I've noticed that Tzipi Frank talks a lot about how to write gittin. That's what seems to be an issue that came to him again and again and again. And now I'm just beginning to notice that Noda Behuda, this is from Adur Tinyana, Evan Ezra Simon Chaf Bet, the 22nd response from the Evan Ezra section, from the 26th of Iyar of Tuf Kuf Lamed Zion of 1777. And he's in the Kfar, he's in the village, he says, they always go out to the village. 77, he's like 67 years old, I think. He's 64 years old. So he's not such an old man, but his practice was in the summer, late spring, to go out to the village and to be there. He didn't seem to have a lot of farm out there. So, because at the end of the tshuva, he says, and I don't have any farm with me to check this out, but this is what I remember. It seems so clear to me that this is true. So, he's giving a quick answer to a question. And he says he's going out there for medicinal reasons. So there's some couple that people are saying maybe they have to get divorced because she had a baby 6 months and 3 days after the last time she went to mikvah. So the claim is that that wasn't long enough, and I guess she and her husband had not had relations before that for whatever reason. So the claim is, or the worry is, that she must have had this baby from somebody else, and therefore she's had an affair, and therefore she and her husband have to split up. That's the claim that's being brought to him. So he says, I don't understand what you're talking about. She'd had 6 full months since the night she went to mikvah, plus 3 days. And everybody agrees that when you have a premature baby, a 7-month baby, so this is one of the interesting topics in halacha of how we do or don't accept the physiology of the time of the Gemara. The Gemara assumed that their babies are born after 7 months and their babies are born after 9 months, and that those are both different types of terms of babies. It's not a 7-month baby in the Gemara is not like the same kind of a premature baby as we would mean when we say preemies today. And a 7-month baby can also be born in the Mekutain with a little bit of time cut off. So this is a baby that was supposed to be born after 7 months, and it's a little premature. That's so you can get a 6-month and 3-day baby, and it's still the father's baby. So there's any reason to think that she had an affair. So problem is, there was a call about her. There's rumors about her that said that she's pregnant from an affair. So those rumors have some halachic status, and we have to worry about them. And also, she had said she told people she was going to the doctor because she wasn't menstruating anymore. So we were saying she's not menstruating then, although I'm not sure she went to mikvah, but whatever. She's not menstruating, that she couldn't have gotten pregnant by her husband. So he says, the whole thing doesn't make any sense to me, because a rumor like that, you're not going to separate a husband and wife because of a rumor. And whether or not she, not whether or not, and the idea that maybe she stopped having, it stopped menstruating, that would not be a reason to say that it's evidence that she had an affair. There are things that are evidence of an affair in halacha, so that they're called dvar kiyor, but those things that are called dvar kiyor, those are only in situations that led people to assume she was having an affair. They knew they had sort of witnessed she had an affair. So things like, let's say, they found her clothing and she was like coming out of a room with a man and they were both adjusting their clothing or something like that. So those would be things that would lead us to believe that they were having an affair. But here the rumor isn't that she was having an affair. I mean, it was, but the rumor was really that she was pregnant because of an affair. But it was the pregnancy that people were noticing. So the idea of pregnancy is not considered in halacha a dvar kiyor. They just saw that she wasn't menstruating anymore. They assumed she was pregnant, and therefore, back then. So they assume she's already pregnant, and then she goes to mikveh and has a relationship with her husband. You know, sometime later they say, nah, she was already pregnant. And that's what they're claiming, right? So she's had the baby, and she's claiming it's from the husband, and they're saying, no. Because you told us before the husband, let's say, if he was off on a business trip, before he ever came back, he told us you weren't menstruating and seeing doctors, that's because you were already pregnant, must mean you had an affair. But the Rabbi Yehuda's point is, but the evidence they're bringing is not evidence of an affair, it's evidence of a pregnancy. And we don't in halakha have the idea that it's dvar kiyor, evidence of an affair, stems from evidence of pregnancy. It only stems from evidence of an affair. Anyway, then the Rebbe goes and says, and even if you were to tell me that it's evidence of an affair, there's another problem here. You'd have to be sure that that affair happened in a place where we would have known and be able to catch the guy she was having an affair with had she protested. Because in halakha in general, let's say you find out a woman had a relationship with somebody else. A woman shows up one day. Husband comes back from a business trip, you know, a year-long business trip, and his wife is 4 months pregnant, right? So does that mean that she's had an affair? Not necessarily. It means she's had relations with another man, but she might have been raped. So the Nota Behuda points out that unless you know that this affair, so in a dvar ki, or in ordinary things where we say we see evidence of an affair, it's because we see them in a place where if it was being forced upon her, she would have called out and we would have protected her. But here, where she just shows up pregnant, we can't assume that it was voluntary, because maybe she was raped, and if she was raped and her husband's a regular Yisrael or is not a Kohen, then they can still live together. So the Nota Behuda says, for these reasons, you have at worst a strict zveka. Maybe the lack of menstruation had nothing to do with the pregnancy, and she wasn't pregnant before her husband came back. And even if she was pregnant before she came back, maybe she was raped. So this is one more example that will be dealing with issues of women who seem not to have been as faithful to their husbands, and whether or not we require separating the husband and wife from each other. And this is one more example in my memory of him being lenient about this and working very hard to allow married couples to stay together and to reassure them that they don't have to assume that something untoward has gone on. So that was our two tshuvot for the 26th of Iyar. First, a question of forceps delivery, and second, another pregnancy question, but this time whether a pregnancy is itself evidence of an affair, with the Rabbi Yehuda allowing a husband and wife to stay together, even though there were those who claimed that the pregnancy she had must have been a pregnancy of an affair with somebody else. Have a great day.